Greetings, aliens. It is me, your one and only host, Miss Ella Sanchez of the Nadie Preguntó podcast. But I'm having a blast, and I hope you are too. Friends, my fellow aliens, I'm alive, and I know you guys don't care that I am or not. But just a little, a little catch up, if you will. I got the Ronas 3 years into the pandemic, first time ever, lost my COVID virginity. Hopefully it's my last time, like 2 weeks ago, maybe three at this point. And I do have slight cough, not as much as I did like last week. Last week was a little bit worse. Like my voice was still, you know, a little gross, and I do sound a little congested still, but I promise we're all good. I'm eating regular again. Not gonna lie, I rate COVID as like a 6/5 out of 10. Day one was pretty brutal, but the rest of the, like, by day three, I rose. On that day, I rose. Or whatever the Bible says, I don't know. Just a little Catholicism humor for you, since I did go to Catholic high school. So, on the third day, I rose again. So, there's that. But, yeah, honestly, it wasn't too bad. I'm very grateful for that experience. But nonetheless, I will be clearing my throat maybe a lot this episode. So just a little preface on where I have been, even though I know you didn't ask nor care. But I'm alive and well somehow. I did it. We did it, Joe. And I will be probably clearing my throat a lot. If you're not down to hear that for at least 45 minutes, I don't know what to tell you, babe. You can unsubscribe. But nonetheless, let's dive in. So if you're new here, hi, welcome. You probably didn't ask at all for that monologue, my little soliloquy, if you will. But that's where I've been. I know you didn't ask. But if you're new here, hi, welcome. You have a lot of homework to do, babe. Like, you got a lot, and I mean a lot of episodes you can listen to, and I know you're bound to find something you like. And I know that if you say you don't, I know you're lying to my face. So let's not lie. And if you're returning, hi, babe. Thanks for dealing with my hiatus. I really love you. Hope you got that promotion. Hope that you got all your dreams come true. I hope that you've been enjoying, I don't know, whatever's making you happy in this life right now, in this moment in time. But nonetheless, this topic I was going to do 2 or almost 3 weeks ago, so we're just going to jump right in. You read the title. We're going to talk, and we're going to talk about it. So grab your tea, grab your coffee, whatever it is that you love to munch on or indulge in when you're listening to a good podcast like me. And you should only be listening to me. Don't ever cheat on me. Literally don't. I'll always know. But anyways, grab whatever it is you want to munch on, drink on, whatever it is. Your poison today, this Sunday. Without further ado, let's get into it. And we're back, ladies and gents. Hi, how are we? How are we doing today? I just realized that, one, my intro was really long, so I apologize. And two, my last episode I uploaded before my life turned into shambles, was social media breaks, which I find very ironic since I didn't even purposely take a break. Literally, the universe said, bitch, you're gonna be bedridden for like 2 days. So, nonetheless, though, since this episode is like an older theme I had that I wanted to do like 3 weeks ago, basically, I did do research on this already. So you read today's title. So today's episode, I wanted to touch on because I feel as if it's something that is really urgent in my personal life, and I feel like for a lot of other people as well. Not even just, I actually am recording this on the last day of Hispanic Heritage Month. This will be up tomorrow, which will be not technically Hispanic Heritage Month anymore, but I'm going to still count it anyway, since it's probably going to be less than 24-hour difference of my concept that I'm discussing today. So today's episode is the urgency for therapy inclusivity. As of now, I actually have, like, prior to, like, when I was making and doing my notes for this episode that I thought I was going to do within the week that I had planned before my whole life turned around pretty much 3 weeks ago, I did not have a therapist in line for me, and I was in the process of looking for a new one. For those who don't know, really mini summary of my therapy, I guess, journey, if you want to call it that. I did see a psychologist when I was maybe in middle school, like 14, 15, and she was also like a family friend as well. So probably not the best form of you know, therapy, but I had just moved from no. I was living in Miami at the time, and then I moved back when I was around 12, 13 to California. I am a California native. Don't get it twisted, all right? If you call me a Floridian, I'm gonna beat your ass, all right? I'm gonna beat your ass. There's still a big place in my heart for Miami, as always, but never call me a fucking Floridian. Like, that's not true. Don't ever say that to me, all right? Just so you know. It'll be hands on sight. And so, I was in the process of, like, dealing with a move and stuff like that, and I was really young at that time, so I had lost all my friends and family, especially since all of my family lives in Miami, all of my primos, tios, all that, so I didn't have them as close to me anymore, and to be ripped of that was sudden, even though it was my decision and my sister and I's decision and my whole family's decision, really, to go back to California, but nonetheless, I did see a psychologist at the time since I was really depressed. Still am low-key. So quirky, so fun. And yeah. Oh, I should probably give a preface. Today's episode is discussing mental health, so just a content warning. Mental health, in any capacity, like any subcategory involving that, if that's something that's a little too heavy for you today, I get it. But nonetheless, to fully dive in even further, I saw a psychologist when I was around 14, and then I didn't really do anything about it, and I just saw my family friend at the time, who was the psychologist in question, a couple times, every week or so, and then I just kind of faded out of it as I just accustomed to my new life, or getting a new life, essentially, building a new life for myself since I did move back. And from then on, I never touched base with therapy again. I knew I wanted to go back for every year I decided it, but also totally into the topic of today's episode is that I never touched base with therapy ever again, really, from being 14 until I was an early adulthood and early pandemic, you know. That's how long I went without it, like pretty much 10 years without it. Never touched base with it. I knew I had to. I never knew that it'd be something I really needed. And I knew it was something in the back of my mind that I was like, I should probably take this more seriously than I actually am, but I'm not. And since we're on the topic of my therapy journey or whatever, I don't know why journey sounds so cringe to me, but essentially that's what it is. I wish there was more explanation as to how people can start therapy at such young ages. I feel like, especially growing up in an immigrant household, my mom's more accepting of the idea of therapy and, you know, help and self-help and stuff like that. She's more accustomed to it. My dad, on the other hand, not really. More old school, more old fashioned, and the best way to cope is to work. That's essentially his mental stability and his mental state and his beliefs. And I was living with my dad at the time during the whole situation of what is it? Moving and coming back to California. It's a whole long thing I don't need to get into, but the gist of it, I was living with my dad and my sister at the time in California in our old house, and therapy would not be an option. Therapy was not a topic of conversation, and it was not something I ever really thought about, considering I know for the fact at the time I would have gotten the answer no if I were to ask for therapy and or consider it even at the time. And so, or at least I think that's what would have happened. I mean, I was literally bordering on 15 years old. Like, I was a child. So, I feel like the urgency to promote therapy access, and I feel like it's a very big conversation to have in general. Doesn't matter how old you are, but I feel like a more emphasis on younger generations. I feel like I have more hope for younger generations, the ones that are coming after me or coming after Gen Z. I have hope for them because I feel like mental health is a much more serious topic that people actually touch base with. I feel like Gen Z is a generation that is going to talk about mental health more, millennials, they talk about it and they join, or they started maybe therapy when they were maybe 20s and stuff like that, maybe a little bit younger. I'm not here to tell you how your therapy journey should be or should not be. That's not what we're doing today. But nonetheless, it is so important and so crucial to have access to even finding how to even get started. I feel like that's the more important element that no one really touches base on. Yeah, we should talk about and promote, you know, getting therapy and finding financially accessible sources and ways to get therapy. But I think even the more important question to really emphasize is access to even where to start. I feel like we all need someone to talk to, someone to lean on during hard times, or in general, you just need a clarity in your life. And I don't think there's enough sources out there to even explain what therapy is there for. And I can't lie to you, every time a therapist has asked me, what are you looking for in therapy, I like freeze. I'm like, I don't fucking know. Isn't that kind of your answer, or your like kind of something that the therapist should answer for me, you know? I freeze up and I don't know what to say. I don't know. I just feel like I know I need it in some capacity, and I can't even tell you what therapy is meant to do. I'm not going to stand here, or technically sit here, and tell you what therapy is, because I can't even give you a solid definition. I really can't. All I know is that you go to someone and you essentially pay them for their time to listen to your problems, console you, and help you navigate your life, essentially. Like, kind of like a life coach, but actually better, that actually knows what they're doing. And of course, there's sucky therapists out there. Of course, there are not the best ones out there. I've had my fair share. And that's essentially my really long story short, not really, on my therapy journey and where I'm at with it. I did try BetterHelp, y'all. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that there's no one on there that can't help you, because I feel like a lot of people saying, oh, they're not real therapists. I'm like, yes, they are. I did have a really great therapist in the beginning when I first started. It was just very expensive. I was paying like $300 like per month. Not my kind of deal. Not my cup of tea. Pass. And I stopped because I did switch therapists during that time. And I will explain why I did. And then I went with someone else and they weren't really what I needed, and all of a sudden I found myself really leaving therapy essentially with BetterHelp. And then I found another great therapist through my insurance that I have, like maybe a year later, I want to say, or a little bit less, I don't know. A year later, I want to say. And she was great, and then unfortunately she moved away, so my insurance, it's like basically the insurance aspect of it. But nonetheless, I am very particular, as one should be, of their therapist. I feel like it's okay to be very picky when it comes to the therapist you choose and interview, potentially, you know, seeing the candidates, you know, for your own life and what you need and what type of healing and work style works for you when it comes to therapy. There's so many possibilities, so many forms to heal the mind and heal oneself. And there are so many different types of practices to heal oneself, or at least attempt to the best of your ability. And my reasoning for picking this topic is not only because there's so many subcategories and so many umbrella things under the umbrella, essentially, and full pun intended, because it is really sprinkling outside today on Saturday, October 15th. And I feel like there's so much to cover that I definitely will probably not even touch every single, you know, subtopic in the topic of therapy and the topic of, and the conversation essentially of therapy being more inclusive. But long story short, and truly I mean it this time, long story short, finding a therapist has been very difficult for me, only because I am looking for a therapist that is Latina of any, I don't really care where they're from, just Latina and a woman. And my reasoning is I don't really feel like I owe anyone why, but a lot of people do ask me, like, why are you so picky? It's like, well, I've had already maybe a solid three therapists already, including one psychologist, and I've all of them, I have to say, my first and my most recent one have been the best ones I've had. Are they flawed? Yes, of course. I feel like there's no perfect practice out there, but hopefully I can find one out there for me. And I'm looking for a more permanent therapist, and I just don't see the point of having a therapist that doesn't look like me or doesn't feel the same things I do to some capacity or understands the whole immigrant mentality, the immigrant dream that I've grown up to see. I'm not gonna talk to a white straight man that was born in fucking Texas about what it means to struggle with the immigrant mentality and the expectations that immigrant parents set for their children. Lord, I don't even care if you got five master degrees, a PhD on how to be a therapist and understand psychology. There is not a white straight man on this planet that can tell me how to cope with generational trauma, and including generational trauma that involves the conversation of immigrants and immigrant mentality and immigrant lifestyles and immigrant expectations. I'm sorry. I hate to be that person. If you're a therapist listening to this and a white therapist at that, hate to break it to you, man, but I don't want your fucking services. And I'm not saying that their methods can't be useful. Of course. My first therapist on BetterHelp, he was a white man, and he was a white straight man. And I feel like every therapist I've had so far, I've learned something new about myself, and I think that's a pretty good thing to have, you know? No therapist is perfect, and I don't really believe there is the perfect one, just the best one for you, to the best of their capability, because it is a 50-50 relationship. Therapy is not a solo thing. It is not something you can do on your own. Your therapist tells you this, this, and that, and you have to do your own work. And basically, if you want to get better or cope with the life that you live and have, you gotta fucking put in that work too. And it sucks. It's hard having to relive the trauma every single day for some people, me, myself included. But someone has to fucking do it and get your fucking ass up and heal. It seems like nobody wants to heal these days. No, I'm kidding. I would very much like to heal. It's just really stressful and I'm just tired of it. Like sometimes I consider, I'm just like, what if I just ignore it? What if I just don't unpack it? Because I'm kind of tired of doing that. I'm kind of tired of crying every therapy session. Because I'm not gonna lie to you, I'm kind of over it. Like, what happens if I just ignore it? Like, it's not like it won't go away, you know? I've had those thoughts, and I still do. I still do. And so, yeah, that's my main, well, that's one really important concern, is I don't want to have a therapist that doesn't look like me or resemble me in any way and or understands what it means to be child of immigrants and or an immigrant themselves, you know? And I feel as if without that, there's going to be a disconnect, and there's going to be a lot of moments where we're both lost in translation. And like I said, I don't care how many fucking master degrees you have. If you have like 10 PhDs on psychology and being a social worker and studying the course load and the track to become a therapist, if you're just going to be a white straight man from like Yeehaw, Texas, I'm sorry. You can't help me, man. And I'm not saying you don't have good intentions. That's just the way it is for me. And so it brings me to my first point today. A lot of people say, well, like, why don't you just settle for a regular therapist? Like, why do they have to be like this? It's like, okay. So this is for the girlies and the baddies that menstruate, if you will. My cycle as of recently And I know it has something to do with my IUD, and I don't even have the hormonal one. So fun fact, even if you have a copper IUD, that shit plays with your fucking hormones. They lied to you. I don't care what they say. It fucks with your cycle in some capacity. Obviously not the, you know, the symptoms part, like the bleeding and everything. I'm talking like emotional symptoms. The more you know, and it's advertised as non-hormonal. That's how fucking scammy these big pharma companies are. But well, that's that for another day. And yes, I wish I could do research on that. I'm just too lazy to read all that. Anyways, though, my cycle as of recently plays an enormous role in my emotions and my mood and my feelings and my daily life. And as those who menstruate do, I'm not the only one. I have met several women that have the worst cycles of their lives, and it's hell on earth when their period comes. I am one of those people. And I have been there. I know for a fact that not only does this copper IUD mess with my, or it did at least, not anymore, thank God. But in the very first few months with it, I noticed that not only was my bleeding heavier, longer, and all that, like, because I knew that was coming. I'm not surprised by that. That wasn't what surprised me, because I knew it was going to come. My gynecologist told me, Google told me, like, it was not something I was not expecting. But what I didn't expect was a slight weight gain when I first got it, like ever, like the first month or the first few weeks I had it ever. And now, present day, since I've had it for officially a full year and a couple months, that it really shifts my emotions. I've never had this before. You can call me crazy, I know, because I know I have a non-hormonal IUD, and I know for a fact that I could tell a gynecologist this, I could tell millions of gynecologists in one room, hey, I have a non-hormonal birth control method inside of my body right now, and it has ruined my cycle, not, you know, symptom, like, bleeding-wise, like, emotionally and mentally-wise, it has ruined my life. And so they would laugh in my face. I'm telling you, they're like, oh, but it's not hormonal. You're just imagining it. No, bitch. No. Whenever I realize that there's this one day in my cycle, I've been trying to find what day it is because it's really hard to track everything about your cycle. I feel like I do a really good job of like writing it down or writing the emotions I have, the ones that are not available on my period tracking or cycle tracking app. I like write in the notes section what I feel and things that I feel like are worth noting about my day, my week already. I do a pretty good job about doing that. And so I think I noticed that day 19 of my cycle, I completely shut down. I completely shut down. Like maybe it's another day. Maybe it's a different day. It's like when the day I felt the way I usually do when my PMS is about to start, I am so sensitive to a point where I've never experienced this before. Like, and this actually all relates to therapy, and I will tell you why in a minute, but I gotta tell you the whole story first. And so pre-IUD, man, I never had this bullshit. I never experienced this shit. My period before the IUD, when I tell you that shit was one and done, and I could still work out. The cramps were, you know, they were cramps, but they weren't like brutal. They weren't, you know, crazy bad. I had cramps, but I still went to that gym at 5 a.m. I still went to the gym, did cardio, did abs, and I did not feel any difference. And my period lasted 4 days, and on the dot 4 days. Now my period lasts 4 days and it lingers the spotting after, literally. It's like the actual bleeding part lasts 4 days, five maybe, and then it lingers for like 2 or 3 days after. And I've never had such serious changes in my emotions at all pre-IUD. I literally never even noticed when I was ovulating, if I'm being honest. Like I never noticed because all of my moods would stay stagnant, like they would stay consistent with my daily life. You know, I don't really like associate it with my cycle because my cycle really never really showed any emotions. Like I didn't. The only common symptoms I had pre-IUD were chocolate cravings when the time was coming, and that was it really. Now On cycle day 19 for me is when I shut down. I am sensitive. I'm crying. I can physically feel in my own body my emotions drop 100. Like the day before, I could be totally fine. But day 19 of my cycle hits and boom, I feel like sobbing. I start crying. I'm way more vulnerable and sensitive. I've never fucking experienced that before. And you mean to tell me this shit's non-hormonal? Bitch, suck my fucking dick, Big Pharma. You bitches, count your fucking days. I promise you. I promise you those lawsuits are gonna be exposed one day more than they already are. I'm claiming it, man. Don't sue me for legal reasons. I am just joking. But regardless, enough of me rambling. And this all connects to therapy. Why? Because I can't tell all of that to a man. To someone that doesn't menstruate. I'm sorry. I'm not about to sit here, have a phone call or a Zoom call with a male therapist after I explain all of this to them. And they can try to the best of their capacity to help me and to console me and be like, oh, okay, I hear you. But they don't. They will never understand what that feels. I can say I feel this, this, and that on day 19 of my cycle. Are they going to understand that? No. And I'm not going to waste my fucking breath trying to explain it. I am tired of explaining things to people. I am tired of having to explain my fucking IUD story, all right? I love talking about it because I have made it my little personality quirky trait. So quirky. So girly. But I'm not going to lie. It is fucking crazy when I do have to explain it. After I finish my whole soliloquy of explaining what the IUD has done to myself, my body, my emotions, my cycle as a whole, I sound fucking crazy. Do you not just hear me explain my whole cycle to you right now? And you're probably like, damn, this bitch is crazy. Yeah, it is fucking crazy having to say it all out loud. And you think that a man is going to understand that? Someone that doesn't even menstruate at all is going to understand that? Someone that actually has pure raw emotions that don't involve a cycle? Yeah, they won't get that. I don't see the point. And I deal with the immigrant mentality continuously every day with my immigrant mom, my immigrant father, all of that. Like I said, I'm not going to talk to someone, let alone a therapist, that has not experienced something similar and or lives it. Not really sorry about it. And my trauma is not something a white person, someone that doesn't understand, can help me with. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that their methods aren't effective, because I feel like they would be on someone else maybe, but they're not effective for me. I hate to be that person, but it's true. And you can be sympathetic and console someone as best as possible, and that's really all we can do. Or what these therapists have done so far. But it just won't work. I don't see the point of it working or not. So my first therapist was a white man, and he was great. I'm not gonna lie. He wasn't, you know, his methods were great, but I could feel, you know, it was hard to get through and understand each other, I guess you can say, or understand the situation I was in at the time and my emotions during that time. And I can't go back to that. And also, I just didn't really like that he told me to just like put my pride aside for certain things, because I'm a very prideful person. All right. Sometimes I do put my pride aside for certain things, depending on how stupid it is. If it's like putting my pride aside for making like apologizing to my mom for her being right about something while I was like convinced I was right, then yeah, I will put my pride aside for that. But when it comes to my dad and I, bro. Actually, funny enough, it's his birthday today, so we're gonna get sushi later. And the man is so stubborn, it's crazy. It just, terquedad, bro. I swear. But we're both so stubborn, so it's like a battlefield on that bitch. And I don't put my pride aside when it comes to him. It's just not something I can do. I can't explain why. I just, with my dad, I can't put my pride aside. It's very serious for me. I don't put my pride aside for my father. I don't apologize to him when I'm wrong, because I usually never am, and I'm not being biased. That's true. I'm not usually wrong when it comes to the situation that my dad and I are in. So, but, no sé, you know. But, yeah. It's just really hard to explain. It's really, like, without knowing all the info about my life, you guys are probably like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, and that's okay. You guys don't need to know. Just trust me when I say that Terquedad, that's me. My middle name. And let's move on to not just my whole soliloquy about my life, but the stats, what the numbers have to say about therapists and more inclusivity for therapy, and the urgency to have more therapists of color in general, you know? And I have all my lovely notes here. So, according to the blog, so bear with me, guys. Okay, so the stats are coming, okay? Will I stutter? Perhaps I might. Bitch, I might, okay? So, work with me here. Take some time to maybe go back and, you know, maybe re-listen to the stats for a second. Mellow on it for a minute, you know? Dwell on it. And get back to me. You can pause me for a second. Don't forget me, though. Don't you forget about me. So, anyways, let's look at the stats. So, here are some stats coming in hot. So, according to the blog Simple Practice, pollen, researchers Deborah Bailey and Bruce Hogan conducted and published therapist stats in 2019. And I say the year so you guys can get an idea of how the stats could have changed over time towards, you know, the present day. And I always like to say the year because I personally think the only good thing college has taught me is use as recent sources as possible. That's like probably the best advice I've gotten in college, in my whole college career. So I like to put the year. 2019 wasn't that far away, but it was like a solid 4 years ago. So it's a little bordering on outdated, but not really. But according to the blog of this lovely company, this lovely research group right here, the research study highlighted from Bailey and Hogan that Hispanics face a growing mental health crisis. Less than 6% of U.S. psychologists can provide services in Spanish, even though 18% of Americans are Hispanic. Two, in 2018, Hispanic Americans needed $389 million worth of mental health care services that they did not receive. We project this gap to grow to $485 million by the year 2030. Third stat. The states with the five largest gaps are New Mexico, Texas, Arizona, Nevada, California, West Virginia, and Vermont. And California, West Virginia, and Vermont have the smaller gaps. And last but not least of the study highlights, online therapy may help those close the gap between... Oh, no, let me rephrase that. Last stat. Online therapy may help close the gap because therapists don't have to be in the same location as their clients, and it's increasingly covered by insurances. So, love that we could end on a good note, a positive note. And I will be adding the website to, or like the websites of the sources I'm finding and telling you guys. So for my lovely next little stat for you guys, not me, my Pew Research era, listen. Okay, and so, my next little stat is, according to NBC Black, Patrice Gaines is, in their 2021 article, so a little more recent. As people seek help, it's not unusual to find a Black therapist only to learn that they are unable to accept new clients. As of 2019, only 3% of the psychology workforce in the U.S. is Black, yet many people are specifically seeking a Black therapist. Just like I am seeking a Latina therapist, a lot of the Black community is searching for someone that looks like them, can resonate with them, can understand them. It's not a crime to want those things. It's not a crime to want someone that's going to understand you as best as they can, to the best of their capability. Because honestly, every time I see a Peruvian person, man, or a Peruvian baddie like me, Peruvian girls, I'm like, you always got to do that, like, you know, embraced, you know? You're like, oh my God, primo, what do you mean, you know? That's how I feel. Like, really, I find it to be extremely urgent. I find it to be something that it's not a crime to want to have a therapist that will actually understand you to the best of their capability, because they experience the same shit as you do, or at least pretty damn close, you know? And what's my other little stat? My next stat here is, according to Zipia, the career expert. Oh, wait, I have to zoom in. Actually, okay, so since I did this research a while ago, and by a while ago, I mean like literally 3 weeks ago, I have no concept of time, let alone good memory at all. But Zipia, the career expert, I'm actually going to link it as the first link, or just like the top link that you guys can look for. It's more of like an interactive research like website where you can like put a bunch of different jobs, and then you can see the amount of men, amount of women, and especially even getting more specific, the amount of Black women, the amount of Hispanic women, the amount of Asian women, and same for Asian men, Asian or Black men, and Latino men, like all of those, like the pretty much all the ethnicities you can think about, and see how they play and where they are in certain career fields, and especially regarding the mental health field. And the bigger umbrella would be the healthcare world. And it was like really good to find, because I found a lot of stats that I'm going to tell you right now. So sit back, relax, you know, we're going to talk about it. So according to Zipia, the career expert, the research summary, so using a database of 30 million profiles, Zipia estimates demographics and statistics for therapists in the United States. Our estimates are verified against BLS, census, and current job openings data for accuracy. After extensive research and analysis, Zipia's data science team found that, one, there are over 198,811 therapists currently employed in the United States. Two, 75.6% of all therapists are women, while 24.4% are men. Three, the average age of the employed therapist is 41 years old. Four, the most common ethnicity of therapists is white, being at 76.4%, followed by Asians, which is 10.6%, and Hispanic or Latino, sitting at 6.3%. Five, therapists are the most in demand in New York City. Six, San Francisco, California pays an annual average wage of $77,931, which is the highest in the U.S. Seven, in 2021, women earned 96% of what men earned. Eight, North Dakota is the best state for therapists to live. And lastly, but certainly not least, therapists are more likely to work at private companies in comparison to public companies. Now, I was looking on what type of therapist they were discussing in this little statistic right here, because I saw a lot of different therapists listed, but I put overall therapists because that also does include mental health therapists. I think they were talking about just any form of therapy, whether it's physical therapy or mental health therapy. I feel like all of those do play an important role, even though we're talking about today mental health therapists and social workers and everything, but I couldn't find, because I was like, it was a drop down menu, and one, it didn't have like psychology therapists or anything like that. It was just more a little bit broader career like field in the database. But if you want to check it out, you can play around with it. Maybe you're bound to find the more accurate statistics, but I just want to throw that out there just in case you guys need to know and you want to know more. And so since I got a lot of info from this website, I decided to put the therapist stats by the gender. So therapist statistics by gender, 75.6% of therapists are women, and 24.4% of them are men, like we already noticed and stated. And that is a clinical therapist, actually. I think I did find like the specific subsection. So clinical therapists, 75.6% of therapists are women, while the rest, 24.4% of therapists are men. Now, moving on to the next one. therapist statistics by race, and this is overall therapists. The previous one stated clinical therapists. So, therapists statistics by race. The most common ethnicity among therapists is white, which make up 76.4% of all therapists. Comparatively, there are 10.6% of the Asian ethnicity and 6.3% of the Hispanic or Latino ethnicity. And since I did already list that, more info. Black or African American listed 4.1%. Unknown would be 2.2%. And American Indian and Alaskan Native 0.3%. And actually, my previous therapist that I had couple months ago, actually, earlier this year, she was Native American. So that was very, I just thought I'd throw that in there because her work was great. She was great. And it leads me to ask the more important question that you're probably wondering now. You have all the stats right now. You have all the info you might want to know more about or do more research on your own for. Why does any of this matter? You're probably like, girl, why do you need to know more about this? Like, it doesn't matter. Oh, but it does. That's the thing. Oh, but it does. The urgency for inclusivity in film, TV, every workspace and work industry out there has been mentioned time and time again. We hear the urgency to have more inclusivity. Like, one example, very popular example, is Ariel. How a black woman is now being portrayed as Ariel, which, by the way, I find that to be amazing. Seeing little black little girls just reacting to it was so, so cute and so sweet and just so wholesome. And so that right there is proof that not only is inclusivity so important on the screen or in the workspace that you're in, the healthcare world, inclusivity matters quite literally everywhere. And therapists of all kinds, especially therapists, clinical therapists, the way as a society and more people of color come forward desperately just wanting to be seen and even known to be existed in this life, on screen, in the healthcare world, in the tech world, in any career industry of any kind, just how we fight for that, it is also equally as important to have more people of color, more women, especially in color, like women of color in the therapy world, just in general. That is something that I have not seen promotions for or more emphasis on. Because we see the need and urgency for, you know, inclusivity in TV or film and stuff. And I'm not saying that's not important, because it is. And I know it is. But there's a lot of more buzz apparently around that rather than everyday life, everyday jobs, blue collar jobs, you know? And therapists are no exception. There is an urgency. There is a need. And I am someone that does need that. I am here to tell you that, yes, I am a Latina woman. I need a therapist that looks like me, resembles me, and understands me to the best of their capability, to the best of their extent. And just how everyone says, we need more black actors in power and stuff like that. And I agree. That is very true. However, we need to talk about the urgency for black therapists, Asian therapists, or any type of therapist that isn't white. They're all important. They're all necessary. And just when you think that you may think, oh, well, no one really needs me in that space or whatever. Yes, they do. You are so important. You will find the people that need you, and they will need you desperately. And that's all I can really say. Like, we as people of color have fought continuously and still have to fight all the fucking time to be where we need to be, no matter what room we walk into. Therapy and psychology healthcare is just as important, and it's not an exception. We see the urgency for more on-screen representation of any kind. And it's so important. And I will keep advocating for that as an individual myself. But therapy is no lesser option. We need more people of color in therapy spaces. And that's just the truth. And also, not even just gender or race playing a, or ethnicity even playing a role in that, but LGBTQ plus as well. All of it matters. All of it coming together matters. The intersectionality of therapy needing to be inclusive is so crucial and so essential. And everything matters. The representation in all career fields is so important. And today's focus is especially on therapists. And that's all I'm going to say. That's all I can say. I have nothing else to say in this moment in time. I was too stunned to speak. And so, like, I don't know, y'all. Like, I don't know what else to say. And also, I think I wanted to bring this point up, like, let me just take a breath. I need a fucking breather for a second. One point I'd like to bring up is we hear about black patient negligence and the medical malpractice. And similarly, they need a doctor of their choosing, just like we all do. Just how I'm requesting a therapist that will resonate with me to the best of their capability. The same with another form of healthcare. Do you know how many times I have to hear black women coming forward saying that they were completely ignored? Do you know how fucked up that it like that is? They're over here complaining about pains they have or just anything really. And that goes for everyone. But having to hear it continuously from different marginalized groups, man, like, it's heartbreaking. And those are also forms of healthcare. Same goes for therapists and psychological workforce as well. They're just as important. They're equally important. There is no, like, this isn't the struggle Olympics. They're all equally important. They should all be treated as such. And I already mentioned on and off, like, why do I personally need a woman and a person, like a woman of color, to be my therapist? And like I said, I can't explain generational trauma of the immigrant mentality that's been going on from my father's father and parents. And I would say my grandparents, but I never met them because they passed before I could meet them. Same goes for my mom. I never got a chance to meet my grandparents on both sides. And it all started with them. It started with them. Then they pass it on to my father. And then they passed it on to me. Like, it's something that, it's a really big responsibility. Okay, hi aliens, hi. I got cut off mid-sentence by Audacity, if you will, on this little program I used to record. So sorry for the chaos that you're probably like, what the fuck? She was literally mid-sentence. You can blame her. And you can also blame my laptop because every 5 seconds it says, disk is full, disk is full. I'm like, baby, I own a hard drive already, an external hard drive on my own. That's like 5 terabytes. Like, when does it end? I don't know. And now there's a dog barking. Nonetheless, to continue my last final thoughts, because I actually do have to head out very soon, and your girl's gonna get sushi right now. So, without further ado, my last and final thought had to deal with the responsibility that one has. And you might be listening to this and you're thinking like, oh, like, my responsibility right now, in this moment in time, is a lot for me to bear in therapy. And I'm right there with you. I'm talking to us right now. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to me. I'm talking to anyone that feels the need that the generational trauma is on them, on their backs. And what I'm here to tell you is that it's not your burden, even though it feels like it is. I think I saw this therapy meme of all things one time, and it's like, therapy is you being in therapy is being in therapy because the people in your life that need to go to therapy are not going in therapy. So you need to be in therapy because the people in your life do not go to therapy. And I honestly really resonated with that, if I'm being honest. No one else in my family goes to therapy except for me. So there you have it, folks. And so my last and final thoughts is that therapy is so important. And I think that we should advocate more for the inclusivity of therapy in being more accessible and affordable. And not only that, but on top of all that, just even where to start. Like maybe you're actually having a great life right now and you feel like, well, like, I don't know if I need it, but I feel like I should have it, you know? And there's no right or wrong when it comes to therapy. That's the best and also can be the worst part about it. If you're someone like me that needs some form of direction, at least to get somewhere, it's really hard. And therapy is hard for someone, or at least some people like me, that need an ounce of form of direction. That if I don't have any sense of direction, I literally can either come up with something really good or really bad. So there is that. But my fellow friends and aliens, I conclude today's episode. This one's a bit longer because I was cut off mid-fucking sentence. But nonetheless, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I had a great time researching it. And even though I did stutter a lot, didn't really have to clear my throat as much as I thought I needed or expected to. But nonetheless, everything will be linked below. I really highly suggest checking out that database for just any career field, and you're looking to get more info on any of the stats on that. But nonetheless, friends and my fellow aliens, I hope that you have a lovely rest of your weekend and a good start to the week. And yeah, thanks for sticking around. Bye.